Greetings and salutations from the Agile Podcast. This is Tony.
Hi, Renee's here.
The Agile Revolution once again.
Tony, where's Craig?
He's with his pants.
Oh, not the pants again. Why do you talk about pants so much with Craig? I think there's something really sus there, personally. Craig's running late in traffic, so he should be here soon, hopefully.
So therefore I was correct, he's with his pants. Assuming that he's wearing them.
Okay. So, Tony, what do you have for us today?
I thought I'd go a little bit left field. A little bit of Apple this week.
Okay.
But it's been floating around there and out there this week is the hire note that new hires get from Apple.
Yes.
So I just thought it'd be interesting to discuss.
Yeah, okay,
so
yep.
I'll read it out for you.
Yep.
There's work and there's your life's work. The kind of work that has your fingerprints all over it. The kind of work that you'd never compromise on, that you'd sacrifice a weekend for. You can do that kind of work at Apple. People don't come here to play it safe. They come here to swim in the deep end. They want their work to add up to something. Something big. Something that couldn't happen anywhere else. Welcome to Apple.
So it's meant to be highly inspirational, right?
Yeah.
Highly engaging?
Yes, I think it's also supposed to be an insight into their culture and philosophy.
Do you know much about working at Apple at all? What it's like?
Unfortunately, I've never had the opportunity.
No, I wondered if, you know, heard or read any blogs or anything like that. I wondered what sort of sustainable pace they had.
They have a very... all reports say that they have a very good culture and that people stay there a long time.
No, but that wasn't the question I asked.
No, I wasn't disagreeing.
All right, so if you listen and you're from Apple,
she always used to be argumentative, doesn't
she? Or you know someone that works from Apple, I'm really keen to hear about whether they actually have sustainable pace. The reason why I asked that question is that when I read that, I'm going, yeah, I get that came from Apple, but part of me just felt it was a little evil.
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 Mm.
Evil. And the reason why it was this little bit of a condescending attitude. So like, we're Apple. You're here. You're gonna make it now. It's sort of like when I was at IBM, they quite commonly reinforced to us it's a privilege to work for IBM. You should feel privileged to work here. And it sort of has that same sort of feel to it. It's a privilege to work at Apple. You should be privileged to work here. And in reality, it's the people that make the products, right? Apple or IBM or whoever else should feel privileged to have you there, to have you passionate for them.
Is the culture bigger than the people?
Oh, that's such a D&M for 8 o'clock in the morning, Tony.
I had to ask the question, didn't I?
I don't know, but what do you think?
I think that the culture itself, once culture is actually imbued and embedded, becomes bigger than the people because it becomes a living thing of its own. I know that's very deep and meaningful, and coming from me, most people would not expect that. But
I mean, culture is incredibly difficult to change once it's been set. And really, it's very hard to change bottom up. It's more of a top down sort of thing. And a mindset. You know, there are some brilliant cultures in the world that I would love to work for, some organisations that have some just amazing ones. And but they're very far and few between. Like, Apple is one. Apple's quite known for its innovation.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm not quite sure if I'd work there, but I know that they probably wouldn't have me because I wouldn't be good enough.
Really?
Really.
Okay.
So what were your thoughts on the post, anyway? Did you feel inspired by it?
What I tried to think about was if I had that handed to me on day one.
Yeah. Along with the note, by the way, to install your own PC. Because they do that too as well. You know that, right? The minute you walk in the door, you get handed your box and a note that says, you know, this is yours to install. Go for it.
Yeah. They get told to install their own Mac.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. Okay, sorry. Whatever. Oh, my God. Keep going.
I just think if I was given that on day one, what would that do for me? Now, if I'd applied for a job at Apple, I would already be aware of what Apple is and how Apple is. So I think for me, that would be a massive kickstarter. And it's something you could really pin up and look at each day and think, is that where I'm headed? Is that what I'm doing?
So it's really about getting someone highly motivated from day one. But they already would be. That's the thing that's a little bit weird to me. Like, you would be motivated day one. Whenever you start a new job anywhere, you're highly motivated day one. Because the world is your oyster. The possibilities are endless. You haven't had this culture smash you down yet.
Wow. Very passionate, Renee. You started on a very energetic mode this morning.
I've already had my coffee. Thanks.
I just thought it was really interesting when I was reading through it, and I was thinking to myself, you know, is this the sort of thing that a lot of other organisations should be doing as well? I don't know the answer to the question, but I was just trying to phrase it in that.
Yeah, it's a really good idea to have something to establish a culture with day one. Yeah. I don't think that's wrong.
Yeah. I mean, it's inspiring.
Yep.
And it demonstrates the nature of the work at Apple. And it explains why their products are the way they are and why they're so refined.
Okay. Refined.
For me.
All right, refined. Sorry, just dealing with bugs galore at home with Apple, but sure, refined.
Have you ever owned a PC? Anyway.
I haven't. No, anyway. Moving on. I saw an interesting blog by Juan Barberis. I'm not quite sure if I pronounced that right. It's a software education blog, and the blog was called Thinking Agile for Change Management. Think again. And think again. And what Juan goes into is, he says that he's finding a lot of people, when he's rolling out or transitioning organizations to Agile, are being incredibly passionate about not wanting to go down that route. So he's getting a lot of pushback from people on Agile transitions. And then he goes in to highlight the Schneider model of culture types. Have you heard of the Schneider model at all?
Precursor. It's a big word saying only a little bit.
I can't say it. How do you work?
Precursory.
What does that mean?
You're making me say it now 3 times after I've had coffee.
Fine.
Small. Edge of it. Edge. Know what it is.
Okay. Anyway.
Heard of it. Haven't really delved into deep.
So it's...
This is Agile by Numbers for Renee this morning, people. Just as a side note, because Craig's not here to help me. Okay? Good. Let's keep going.
So in the Schneider model of culture types, he describes there's a x-axis and a y-axis, so there's an intersection point. If you think about the y-axis, basically it's 4 quadrants, right? So on the y-axis at the top is reality-oriented, on the y-axis on the bottom is possibility-oriented, on the x-axis on the right is company-oriented, and on the x-axis to the left is people-oriented. So the top left quadrant, it's about collaboration, about working together. So it's a culture of working together. The bottom left, which is people-oriented, possibility-oriented, is a culture of cultivation, of learning and growing and having a sense of purpose. In the top right is quadrant around control. It's reality-oriented, company-oriented. It's about getting control and keeping it. And in the bottom right is about competence. So it's about being the very best. And what he's suggesting in this particular post, which I thought was really quite interesting, was that, you know, your organizational culture, we've been talking about that a little bit this morning, will sit on one of these quadrants somewhere. And he's saying not all of these quadrants are suitable towards agile transitions. He's saying that the collaboration quadrant and the cultivation quadrant are probably well suited towards transitioning to Agile, but the control one and the competence one,
mm-hmm.
less so. So by this time I'm thinking, yeah, I can get that you would be more successful in transitioning to Agile if you're already in that collaboration cultivation zone.
Because they couldn't transition to Agile because their stuff's special, right?
In the control area,
it's different to anywhere else that's ever done it before.
So what he was suggesting, and went through Lean and Kanban and Kaizen and Deming and how they applied to command and control environments and how they benefited more towards by implementing them first in those two quadrants, such as control and whatever the competence is one.
Cue page flicking.
Sorry. By implementing them by Lean, Kanban or Kaizen or Deming first in those quadrants, that you better get a result of transitioning towards Agile after. So Lean first, then Agile. And it was sort of hinted at, but sort of as the post got on, it got a little bit less clear about where he was trying to go. And that's where I sort of felt that he was trying to go, but it was more sort of leaving those quadrants alone, almost completely saying, you know, don't touch them, look at Lean. Zendnote is about, the key is about implementing tools and techniques and context, conducting regular retrospectives and adjusting as needed. And I sort of thought, it started really well and then it sort of lost its pace going through. So I sort of wondered back, it made me reflect about organisations that I've done transitions in and what their culture was versus how we applied Agile to it. And in almost all instances, it was more that control-based, and it almost always is.
It is, yeah.
In that control-based culture. And your whole job is about shifting it to the left, towards collaboration and cultivation.
Yeah, I mean,
by applying Agile, I mean, I can think about the organisations that I worked in, they were highly uncollaborative. People worked in silos, they never talked to each other. And by introducing Agile, we encouraged that collaborative culture. And it sort of made me think, I get how it could be easier in those organisations, but that doesn't mean that you wouldn't try it.
No, and look, I take the point that if you had Lean or Kanban introduced in an organisation previous to starting your Agile rollout, it would be easier.
Yeah.
There's no disagreement in that, because you have those repeatable processes, your problem solving is...
And you're not trying to change the as-is process.
That's right, you're not. So that's... I don't disagree with that point of view. However, I wouldn't say that it's... You have to do it that way. It would be great to do it that way. Agile is one of those amazing things that it's a culture shifter.
Yes.
Yeah. It has the ability to change both the culture and to actually change the physical way that people work. It's an amazing, powerful set of tools, thoughts. And talking through the way with yourself many times, you know, we've seen that whole shift in many times. And I made that sarcastic comment before when you were reading out the quadrant saying, because their technology is different, or because they're... How many times have we heard that doing this?
Yeah, I mean, snowflake syndrome of I'm different is prevalent in every single instance that we go into.
So, I mean, the reality of it is... Oh, hang on, we'll have to do this already. One, two, three. Ta-da! And Craig is here, along with his pants.
Craig.
My pants?
don't start them again.
She asked me where you were at the beginning of the podcast, and I said you were with your pants.
And I was indeed, yes. That is not a lie.
Yes, so I mean, the reality of it is we've seen the culture change in many command and control situations, and more often than not, that's the place that you want to go. That's the place where you want to actually
transform the culture.
Make that transformation.
That's a deliberate intent, yes.
Correct.
So you have to, you can't just give up on the whole command and control cultures. They're the ones that are going to be hardest.
They're the ones that you have to show the value to.
Yeah. And there's a lot of hard work out there for us.
Correct.
So the second article I have is called radiostorycards.com. Have either of you heard about this?
These are the ones with the RFID chips in them.
With the new little chippy things.
Yes. So it's a combination of an open source software and RFID tags or hardware that you can use to link your physical story cards to digital tracking systems such as Jira. So basically you have these little plastic pockets or wallets. You stick your index cards inside of them, and then you stick your RFID tags inside of them, and you run some software somewhere, them tuning across it wherever your Jira instance is, and by magic it updates as you move them.
So in Sometimes we talk about simplicity, and this to me just, it's a cool idea. I wonder, it's like, are we solving the right problem?
creating a whole set of new problems.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
What if I picked that card up and, I don't know,
took it home? Yeah. Well, dropped it in the bin.
But it's not work in progress, it's work at Craig's. I don't know.
Stuck it in his pants.
Oh my God, Tony, enough with the pants.
I'm only doing it because I can see it's working you over, so.
I don't get it. I thought you would love this.
I think it's a cool idea.
Yeah, but it's cool.
I guess maybe I've seen so many of these cool ideas. I've seen people trying to get Kinects working, the Xbox Kinect system, which is fine, but you've got to have a place on a wall then to actually put the Kinect system, and it's flaky if it doesn't pick up the tracking of the person. I've seen people do stuff with Wiimotes and pointed at screens, and it needs all this extra software and baggage to come along with it.
Then there's the QR codes as well, when you take the picture of it and it updates from the picture.
Oh, yes.
The flow stuff. So I think it's a good idea, and I think in the case of simplicity, if you are using cards, it's pretty simple, but you've still got to go and program that chip to say this is related to card number 27, and there's got to be that relation.
You still have to do the hard work inside whatever tool that you're using.
So there's still lots of work there. So I think it's cool, but I think in some places there's probably a place where if you really, really want to have a virtual wall and a manual wall, this could be the closest there is to keeping them in sync.
Yeah. The thing that disappointed me more than anything is that the website itself had a lot of coming soon sort of stuff, so it's obviously still in progress about what it is and how it works and how the software works, but you can find out more at Radio Story Cards. Right, Tony?
Yes. I thought it might be time for Craig.
He's still loading.
Is he still?
Yeah, you can't see that.
I'm so not going to go there. So not even getting it into that.
Oh, there he goes.
Do you want me to jump in?
No, I guess I can. I guess I can kind of make it up to go along. I really saw this. It was a really good little video that I stumbled across about a week ago called "The X Model of Engagement." It's a little 7-minute video. It's from a website called Blessing White. You can find it on YouTube. What I liked about this was it was short for a start. You always see those engagement things and they're long and long-winded. These guys just had this very simple model about where people fit into an organisation. I think, and this is really for larger organisations.
Hold on, you're talking about employee engagement here,
yes.
Not getting married or not.
Well, actually, actually, it probably could relate to that if you read that.
Okay.
Because ultimately, at the bottom of your model, there's the disengaged, the people that are never going to want to be there. On the axis of people that are after organisational success, there's what they call the honeymooners, which are the people who've just joined the organisation, and it's like, they're gung-ho and ready to go. And what they also call the hamsters, which are the people that turn up and they just keep the company running on the hamster wheel. So those people are really going for organisational success, but actually they're not really fulfilled. The new people aren't fulfilled because they haven't really figured out where they fit. And for the other people, they believe their fulfillment is just running on the hamster wheel.
Mm.
On the other side, which is more individual success, is what they call the crash and burners, which are the people that are absolutely working, their hardest, but it ultimately are just going to run out of steam and want to leave. They're the kind of the people that are on the cusp. And then in the top part of the quadrant, there's the engaged. Now, what their point was, and this is probably of interest to people like us who do coaching, is that often we spend a lot of our time coaching people that are in the honeymooner, the hamster wheel, or the crash and burners.
Yeah.
But there's this little group of people that are what they call the almost engaged. Right. And mm-hmm. they are the most valuable people in your organisation. So you've got the engaged, you've got the small percentage of people that are there, they're there for the cause.
The 10%,
they understand. But there's this other small percentage, depending on the size of your organisation, probably another 10% or so, that are really in that almost. And your job really is to continue to bring people over that line. And it was just a very nice little simulation of how that worked. Now, they had a couple other models. There's actually two versions of this video. There's the 5-minute and the 7-minute version. So if you take the 7-minute version and invest the extra 2 minutes, they talk about these models of engagement for different people. So For employees, in order to get engagement, it's what they call the ACT model, which is assess, communicate, and take action. That's their model. For managers, they need to follow CARE, which is to coach, align, recognize, and engage. So to really find those people and help them move on. And then for the executives, the people that move the company, they have the CASE model, which is to communicate, which is things like the vision. They need to be seen to be authentic, need to give the vision some significance and bring excitement to the workplace. Ooh. So it was really, really simple and done in one of those, whiteboard type
RSA animates.
Yeah, those type of things, so these blessing white people. But,
So what does the ACT mean exactly? Like, having watched the video, can you walk us through what assess, communicate, and take action actually mean?
So in the 2 minutes they spend on that, they don't spend a lot of time. It's just really some one word answers. But I think to me it was more, if you sort of read between the lines, and I think that's one of the things that makes it so good, is they kind of give you enough to really then take them a little further. So employees need to, essentially the assess is to say, well, look, why am I here? Not really,
introspect, yep.
Yeah. Obviously the communicate is actually to communicate upwards. Because we often don't do enough of that, right?
Okay.
Successes and failures, all the things we talk about in the Good Agile model. And take action, which is to actually, follow through on it. So if you think about Agile, that's exactly what it's about. It's about, looking for those problems, talking to your team and actually solving the problems. So it's the same type of idea.
It's sort of like plan, do, check, act, right?
Yeah, same type of thing. So this is broken down act. Yeah, it's the same type of thing. But I think one of the things you see is these models sort of keep reinforcing, the same types of things we've been talking about. And, if you can find something like this, I think it's very good to show to, a leader, an executive. It's short, it's sharp.
Yeah.
You don't have to read anything.
Yeah.
You can explain it on a flip chart or a whiteboard. For about 5 minutes afterwards, really get some engagement without having to have lots of heavyweight.
Do they talk? Is there a reference to more detail somewhere?
That's interesting. I get the feeling with this particular video that there's something coming. They've got a few resources on their site, but it's mainly based around video. So I don't know what's coming. Whether it's whether they're getting the coaching business themselves, or it's training, or what. It feels like the calm before the storm. Perhaps if someone from there is listening or anyone else has found it, maybe I didn't click on enough links to find it, but it wasn't easily accessible. It wasn't like, click here. They kind of got the model, got a few other models in there as well, but you can't click on them. It really sort of takes you backwards and forwards to the video.
Cool. Excellent.
But it was one of those things I just sort of watched, and it was engaging and worth a bit of a look, particularly if you're trying to talk to your management or leadership.
What I find most interesting about these sorts of models is I wonder how many people have applied them and actually had a demonstrable change in their environment as a result of it.
Yeah, I think the thing with this particular is it's not trying to sell you anything. Like it's just a way of identifying. I think it's what's more powerful about this is that as I watched it, I was sitting there going, yeah, I know people who are in the hamster wheel, and I know people who are in the honeymoon phase, and I know people who are in the engaged, I know people who are almost engaged, and I know people who are in the disengaged. So it's just another one of these models that you can use to it's another thing
to
for the
pigeonhole
toolbox.
People.
Just to help you. Particularly when you go into teams and trying to make an assessment, it seems like a fairly quick way of doing that.
Okay.
But there's nothing behind it, so take it with a grain of salt.
Salt taken.
Well done, Renee.
Okay.
Okay, so mine comes from Creative Emergence. It's called The 9 Principles of Innovation by Marissa Mayer.
So she's from Google?
She is. You are correct, Craig. Yes. Let me just look up. I did bother to look her profile up just for today. She is the Vice President of Location and Local Services, one of the public faces of Google, providing a number of press interviews and so on. There you go.
What a weird title.
Hmm.
Okay.
You know, everybody's a vice president of everything.
Something or the other.
At Google?
Anywhere. In,
you're the vice president of the podcast.
Excellent. Wait. That infers there's a president.
Yeah, we haven't elected one yet, so
All right.
We'll make you vice president.
Cool.
Does that work for you, Craig?
Absolutely.
Yeah, good. Anyway, moving on. She comes up with this 9 principles of innovation,
mm-hmm.
which are interesting. So the first one is innovation, not instant perfection. When you think about that, it's just what you're talking about. It's different words based around the same old concepts, if you ask me, right? So she actually says in here, there are two different types of programmers. Some like to code for months or even years and hope they will build the perfect product. That's castle building.
Yeah.
And there's the companies that work this way too. Apple's great at it, you know? So
it's very lean started-ish.
Look, it's right? Very agile, if you ask me, right?
Yeah. Build, measure.
What are we trying to do?
Yep.
We're trying to get something out there that satisfies the customer and then build on it.
Yeah.
I think the other interesting thing with these is that you often look at companies like Google or Apple and people make the argument, oh, well, you know, they're not agile because they don't, you know, they very rarely use the words, but it's because they've, you know, their way of working is ultimately that. And I think that's
what you mean they're being agile?
Mm.
Yeah, I guess so, right? Well, but people from the outside often, you know, like, oh, well, you know, they do well and you don't see them doing this stuff, like all that, you know.
Well, they call it a different name, guys, that's right, yeah.
Well, it's just...
Well, they don't even call it a name.
It's just because they were that lean startup type model.
Yeah.
I mean, if you read Steve Jobs' book, for example, Apple, right, he talks about iterative delivery. Does he call it agile? No. He talks about how he introduced lean into their operating environments. He was very proud of how he took that from the actual Japanese culture because he'd seen it. Mm. But did he give it the name Lean? No, he just talked about how he'd use those processes. So the other interesting thing that was in this little piece around that particular heading was the hardest part about indoctrinating our people into our culture is when engineers show me a prototype and I'm like, great, let's go. And they'll say, oh, it's not ready. It's not up to Google standards. This doesn't look like a Google product yet. And they want to castle build and do all these other features to make it perfect. I tell them the Googling thing is to launch early on Google Apps and then iterate, learning what the market wants and making it great.
I don't know enough about Google. I keep hearing rumors that they have so many projects in the works and they get canned because everyone's innovating and then they find out that they're actually not very good business ideas. Do you hear that?
Well, that's partly to do with, you know, they've got that model where 20% time where you can come up with things. So it's really innovation, I think, is what that's under. Probably the question, which, unless you work at Google, is how far down the pipe do they go until they stop them?
Mm.
Interesting enough, she says here, the beauty of experimenting in this way is that you never get too far from what the market wants. The market pulls you back.
Yeah, but they cut off, like, ton of projects recently.
Yeah, but have a look at that, right? So, example, here's a good example, Google Wave.
Mm.
Google Wave was awesome. I loved it.
Mm.
Yeah? But it didn't fly with the market. It just didn't work, right? And maybe it was ahead of its time. But they canned it, but they took pieces of Google Wave and now they've embedded that into
other bits.
Gmail and they've embedded
they
pieces.
Pivoted.
They've pivoted.
Yeah.
Right. It's cool. Kudos to you. You got it in. Anyway, it's an interesting little thing. I like the other heading. Ideas come from everywhere. We all have this great internal list where people cost new ideas and everyone go and see them. It's like a voting pool and you can say how good or bad you think an idea is. And those comments lead to new ideas.
Yeah, I like that.
I think that's a fantastic model. And the one I think you're going to like is a license to pursue your dreams.
Oh, shucks.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean going off and doing whatever the hell you want.
No. So Craig hit it on the head. Since around 2000, we let engineers spend 20% of their time working on whatever they want, and we trust they'll build interesting things.
I think one of the things that we lose sight of when we, you know, when people talk about innovation is that people are looking for that thing that that you can identify with. So something like Google Wave, which is a more public example where it actually went out and got called back, the product wasn't quite at the right time or whatever, but the things that they learned out of Google Wave are now changing their other product spaces.
That's right.
So you look at some of the new things they're doing at Gmail and the like. So, you know, it's all that innovation and testing it out. And I'm sure there's plenty of internal projects where they haven't moved forward, but it's helped them with other products that they have. So.
And that goes to number four on their list, right? Morph projects, don't kill them.
Yeah.
Yeah? Eric Schmidt, who's the CEO, obviously made this observation once, which if she thinks is accurate. Any project that's good enough to make it to the labs probably has a kernel of something interesting there somewhere. Even if the market doesn't respond to it, it's our job to take the product, morph it into something that the market needs.
Yeah. Still very lean startup-ish sort of stuff. Yep.
So I could continue on. There's nine more, but the last one I'll pull out of it that I really like is that creativity loses constraints. This is one of her favourites. It's actually one of mine because as I was reading through it, people think of creativity as this sort of unbridled thing, but engineers thrive on constraints.
Yes.
They love to think their way out of that little box. So we know you said it was impossible, but we're going to do this. And that's how we get us there. So it's an interesting flip.
Yeah, I would say it's not even just engineers, it's anyone in the world. So there is the desperate need to have an element of constraints in order to drive a direction on innovation. I saw also a recent post that was talking about innovation in India, and there was a word for it. Can't remember the name. It starts with Y.
Come with me.
Okay.
I wasn't
you read as much as I do. I just figured you might remember it. I'll have to look it up. But
what are you
basically,
okay. So we have an action item for Renee for next podcast.
To find out.
All right. So Renee, will you please take the action to find out the word starting with Y?
Yeah. I spy. Right?
And if she doesn't come through with it, it's up to the team to hold her accountable.
Ouch. Okay. Right.
So, I'm done except for the last one, which is data is apolitical, and that sort of says its own thing, right?
Well, it's always the facts don't lie, right?
Exactly right. I love it.
Okay, excellent. Thank you.
Opinions?
I've got a quote that's related to this. Okay.
Oh, awesome! There's a segue. Take over.
From Henrik Nyberg, the myth: if you can't measure it, you can't improve it. Is easy to bust. Babies learn to walk without metrics. Just to counter that.
Lovely.
Like it.
I have another quote.
There's silence. There's silence on it.
From Flow Chain Sensei, Bob Marshall.
I think I saw both of these.
Deming. So, yeah. The aim of any company is for everybody to gain. Shareholders, employees, suppliers, customers, community, and the environment long term. I love Deming.
Yeah, I can't read him, but...
no, I read him through others as well, but yeah. Yeah.
It's very dry stuff, but I do like some of his concepts.
Love this one, Specs Rex. The word listen, LISTEN, contains the same letters as the word silent. Who said this? I love it.
Yeah, yeah.
That one's been around for a while, but just sometimes you have to see these things again to remind you. And this one from Uranium, which I thought was also really good, which is the CFO asked the CEO, what happens if we invest in developing our people and they leave us? CEO, what happens if we don't and they stay?
Now that I like.
And I've actually felt that firsthand once before as well, where employees just didn't want to be invested in. They're going, but we will leave if you train us. I'm going, I can't believe you're saying this. If you leave, you leave. It's sort of like, can't we actually make you a bit more capable?
Yeah. Yeah, I can't believe in this day and age we still hear so many people come up with that excuse. We don't want to send them on that training course because, you know, that's employable in the marketplace. It's like,
but you hear that from managers, right?
Yeah.
You rarely hear it from the people themselves, and yet I've heard it from people themselves and I'm going, I don't get this.
So we talked about the unengaged.
Yeah.
See that model at work.
So I've got one from Wouter, LA. Wonderful hour every time you think this is hard to test, your design improves and it isn't.
Can you say that again?
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm struggling with that one.
Wonderful how every time you think this is hard to test, your design improves and then it isn't.
Oh, so your thought process is improving.
That quote is just getting me. It's so Yoda-like. Can you un-Yodify it at all?
Hey, can I do it in a voice for you? You want that way, yeah?
No, please don't.
This is hard to test. Your design improves, and it isn't.
Oh, my God.
A podcast you wish to do.
Oh, my dear. last one was from Sharon Robson, one of our local people here.
Oh, we love Sharon.
Instead of focusing on building quality in, let's focus on building passion in. Love your work, quality will result.
Ooh. Yeah, I read that and I thought... I love it.
I don't think it's always true. I've seen passionate people who build
crap quality.
True, but I think.
But more often than not, the people that build quality are passionate.
Oh, yes. I don't disagree. I just think that if you ignore that building quality in peace, then you're looking for trouble. You need to design your work to reveal the problems, right?
But it's easier to get to build quality in if you're passionate. And I think that's more the point.
I mean, the whole thing about learning, building quality in is about learning to see, right? It's allowing you to see the problems when they're small.
And we've talked about this on podcasts previously about passionate people and building quality in. So,
yeah.
Okay. Do you have anything else for us?
I've recently been reading a book by Yves Nouli, who we've spoken about many times on the podcast. A book called "Who Is Agile," which actually, if you look at his blog, this has been a blog post site that's been going on for I think about 18 months or so, but he's releases a Lean Pub book, and it's one of those things. I'd looked at the website a couple of times, like, it would come through on the feed, and there'd be someone I know, and I'd have a bit of a scan, and it was interesting, but probably didn't take as much time. Anyway, he's taken the blog post, he and a few other people have taken the blog post and turned them into a Lean Pub book. So if you haven't seen Lean Pub, it's a very agile way of publishing a book. So you can continue to update the book as you get new amendments. You can charge a range, from nothing to as much as you want. People can choose how much in that range they want to pay for it. You can choose how long they get updates to the book. It's a very, lean, agile way of publishing a book.
So the intent behind the book is to describe thought leaders?
Yeah, so this was one thing, and in fact I was had a bit of a Twitter discussion with David Hussman about this particular book he was talking about with Fords and Yves. It comes across a little bit potentially as a top-end book, right? We talked about the top 100 people, top 20 people.
Top 20, and, 100,
and
lately, yeah.
And the like. This isn't like that. Really what he started with was he just started wanting to find out some more about people in the Agile community.
Who's who, yeah.
And it's not even who's who, it's just the way it's worked is that he started with somebody, and I don't even know who his first person exactly was, and he got them to nominate who inspired them or who he should talk to in the community. Nice. And it's kind of been one of those 6-degree things. He's kept, right? And some people come up all the time, and obviously there's some names here because, they're people, but there's also a whole bunch of people that I'd never heard of on the way through. So the point behind the book is that he gives a bit of a background, and he asks them a bunch of questions. So he asks them questions like, what is something that people usually don't know about you, but it's influenced who you are? If you hadn't been in IT, what would have become of you? What's your biggest challenge? What drives you? What's your biggest achievement? What's the last book you've read? What question do you think I should ask, and what is the answer? So what shouldn't know? And then in the book, which he didn't do in the blog, he's taken other questions from other people and asked them of the people in the book.
Oh, how beautiful. Mm. Yeah.
So it's sort of got this reciprocal type
good
turnaround. This book really surprised me. I don't know what I was expecting when I read it. I don't know whether I was expecting a bunch of, links or whatever, but it was just a really beautiful book.
Okay.
And really, what interested me was some of the people I knew about that I learned some more about, things that I didn't actually, hadn't really learned about them before. And there were some other people I'd never heard of. And what they've done through the book is being a, obviously an ebook, is that there's links all the way through the book as well. So you all of a sudden, are reading the book, and then you find yourself, 16 links deep into something that you perhaps didn't know as much about. And there's actually lots of things that even I've just been coming across in recent times, where I've been doing a lot more research into some stuff and finding some real background to a few different techniques and things that I just hadn't sort of realised where they'd come from.
Okay.
There's about 50 people in the book so far. From our part of the world, there's no Australians, which is a little bit of an oversight. Two folks from New Zealand, though. Shane Hasty,
he's a pseudo Australian.
Yeah, so we're kind of
we're claiming.
Yeah, we're kind of in there, and there's someone else I can't remember who works at the University of Auckland in the book as well. There's mostly Europeans, which is obviously from where Yes is from, and North Americans, which you would expect. But really interesting book, so I really encourage folks to go out and have a look at it. I've been reading it on the iPad, and I've probably got about 100 things that I've underlined to go back and spend some more time looking at.
Okay.
Excellent. Great.
I must admit, I've heard about it a lot, especially in the last couple of months.
Mm.
And I sort of had dismissed it as more of it being a biography of certain thought leaders, but I'm really inclined to have a
same here. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
thank you for that, Craig.
It's just one of those you know how sometimes you pick something up and you don't, it's not what you expect it to be.
Yeah.
And I think it's, I think it, for that reason, and just looking at some of the comments that have been out on the web, is I think, as I mentioned to Yves in this conversation he was having with David Hussman, I think it's, you know, they've actually got a bit of a marketing problem in that people don't really understand what the...
I certainly didn't understand that's what it was.
And I certainly didn't either. As I said, I'd read some of the posts before, but there was something about being in a, you know, in a book. I mean, I was reading a lot of this on a plane, so it was something I couldn't actually put down. I was just reading through it, and that's why I got so much underlined, because I couldn't get out to the web to go and chase some of the further things. But, you know, some of the people, just to give you an idea, Lisa Crispin, Liz Keogh, Bob Marshall, Joanna Rothman, Chris Matz, Mary Poppendieck, Rebecca Wurst-Brock, Jerry Weinberg, Gojo Adzik, Michelle Slieger, Linda Rising.
What's Paris Hilton doing in there?
That's not Paris Hilton, that's Peter Saddington. They're very close.
Peter, we're sorry.
Jenny Jepson.
Although Peter, they've said you have good legs.
Lots of the people who we quote. So take a look at that one.
Right. Well, I guess that's it for us today.
Indeed it is.
So that's the end of the Agile Revolution. You can find us at theagilerevolution.com. You can email us at tony@theagilepodcast.com.
Theagilerevolution.com. Or Renee@theagilerevolution.com.
Craig@theagilerevolution.com.
That's the one. I never get my head around that. You know, those two different, the email address and the...
You just log in your inbox, and if it's there to be read, you read.
That's exactly right. Yeah, it's all good.
The other thing I wanted to really quickly mention before you sign out is last podcast we mentioned the ability to do a retrospective. So we now have a public canvas open on linoit.com. You can find it hopefully in the... the public recently updated area under the name of it.
We'll put a link in the show notes.
I've already tried to link directly to it and I can't for some reason.
Really? I think we can fix that.
Okay. My failure can be fixed for Craig. But yes, the actual canvas is called the Agile Revolution Podcast. So if you could please post your thoughts about the podcast, that would be greatly appreciated.
Awesome. We'll do a live retrospective.
All right. Viva la revolution.
Viva la revolution.
Viva la revolution.